You're listening to a Rhino.com podcast. Yes, you are.
Hey, it's Bob Lefsetz for the Rhinocast, here with my posse, doing a little rock and roll research, because I wanted to say, what a day, what a day, what a day, and it reminded me of that song, What a Man, What a Man, What a Man. Remember that video? Those women look so good. I said, what was that act? I'm getting so old, I can barely go through the mental Rolodex. And they said, En Vogue. That's it. Funny, because they, you know, they're getting older, too. They say, yeah, begins with an E, begins with an E. I woke up, it's a beautiful day. It's November here in Los Angeles, but it's like September compared to the rest of the world, especially the East Coast of the United States of America. And it's beautifully warm, but I had a flat tire on the way here. It's like, oh, boy. Do you call AAA? Do you get towed? Do you tear your car apart? Do you put on the donut? I made it there. They fix the tire, and here I am to podcast. And I want to tell you about this book. And the book I want to tell you about is not the Keith Richards book, okay? I love the Rolling Stones, and I saw them probably before you were born, okay? But the hype on that book was beyond belief. It's making me crazy. And then it lasted for a week, and then it's gone. I tried to read the excerpt in Rolling Stone. I didn't find it was that well written. Something about the whole thing creeped me out, okay? But I'm going to tell you about a different book, Jerry Weintraub's autobiography. There was hype about this, too, back in the spring. That's the spring of 2010, in case you're listening to this long in the future on Jetson's time. And there were a couple of stories told, and it seemed kind of interesting. And my girlfriend's mother had the copy, and she said, oh, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you when I'm done. And that never happened. Not that I really cared, because I had so many other things I wanted to read. And then, on Rosh Hashanah, I went to Evan Lowenstein's house. You remember Evan? Evan of Evan and Jaren. They had the hit. The two unbelievably good-looking guys who had a duo. They had a deal with IDJ, that's Island. Then they had a deal with Columbia. They even had a hit. And Jaren is actually a pretty successful country artist at this point. I went to the NAMM show. NAMM show is really pretty interesting. They make a big point. It's not the National Association of Music Merchants anymore, but they call it NAMM. But it's really something in Anaheim where all the music manufacturers and retailers convene. It's fascinating. The really hardcore love the downstairs. Downstairs where you have all the esoteric equipment. And I tend to think of it as junk, but then you get real people who say, oh, no, no, that's where you have this and that's where you have that. They're the guy who does it alone. And on the very tippity top, you have Gibson and Fender. They're kind of in their own areas. And I'm there with a couple of friends of mine. One, Matt Scannell from Vertical Horizon. And it's funny because if you're somewhat famous there, they're trying to give you stuff. He goes, oh, yeah, I'll try that out. And my friend runs Madison Square Garden. And we're up there on the topmost level, and we're leaving the Fender Gibson booth, and we run into Evan Lowenstein. And Evan's so good-looking, you're not going to forget that you run into him. And he's very in my face. Very aggressive is not exactly the right word. Very intense. And I got a little bit of a bad vibe about it. But then he said he wanted to do something. He wanted to put my name in the Wailing Wall. You know, he's an Orthodox Jew. And we started to have some email. And then he invited me over to his house for Rosh Hashanah. It was me and the guy who runs a Village Recorder. And you can look that up. The credits for Village Recorder are as good as any other studio in Los Angeles. And at this point, I love Evan because that's who he is. He's a very excited guy, very compassionate guy. He has this site called Stage It. Check it out. He calls it virtual busking, but they have these concerts. It's not really like YouTube. I could try to explain it. That would be a completely different podcast. But you should sign up. Check it out. And while I'm there, Evan tells a really good story. He starts talking about going to lunch with Jerry Weintraub. What do I know about Jerry Weintraub? Jerry Weintraub had a management company called Management 3, and he managed Bob Dylan in the 70s, and he convinced Bob Dylan to wear these puffy shirts in concert, which I thought was ridiculous. But, hey, he was a big impresario way back when, and Evan says, as a matter of fact, I've got the book. I'm going to give you the book, and that'll guarantee that I'll see you again. We've since become pretty close friends, and I see him plenty, but it was an interesting thing. And on some level, it's like, I have so many books. People are sending me books again and again and again. It's like, I don't want to read it. I feel like an obligation, whatever. But I was reading a bunch of books and they were unsatisfying. Even reading some highly reviewed books and they were unsatisfying. And I said, I'm going to go through this pile of books that people have given me just to tell them I looked at them and they were crappy. and I picked up the Jerry Weintraub autobiography. I'll give you the exact name of it here. Although if you just Google Jerry Weintraub, you'll get it. The name of the title is When I Stop Talking, You'll Know I'm Dead. And there's a subtitle, Useful Stories from a Persuasive Man. And believe me, this guy is persuasive. I start to read the book, and like the cliche says, cuts like butter. And I want you to read this book, not for any of the reasons that have been in the press. If you read the hype on the book, they'll tell you about all the stories in the book, okay? Like John Denver, who he managed, was frustrated, and Jerry says, I fired Ferguson, and there was really no Ferguson, but John Denver ends up being happy, although he ultimately fires him, and Jerry never really recovers, although he believes he made John Denver, and if you read the book, it seems pretty convincing. That's a fascinating story, which I did a terrible job of telling you, but that's not why I want you to read the book. Second reason why I want you to read the book, it's like dealing with your father. You know, you grow up, and your father starts imparting his wisdom, okay? My father used to tell me these things all the time. You know, they would always be offhanded. You know, you'd be buying something and he would look you in the face and he would give you some, you know, aphorism, whatever. And you would remember. And as you grew up, you may or may not follow that particular aphorism, but you remembered it. And same thing with Jerry. Jerry's father wanted him to be in the jewelry business. And he ultimately did not, which was somewhat disappointing to his father, but he learned a lot of lessons from his father. So on some level, it's so reminiscent of the experience I have with my now deceased father. Wow, a tear is going to come to my eye. And you will recognize that too. But the real reason, the number one reason I want you to read the book is so you can experience how the entertainment business really works. The entertainment business used to be a private little club, and people would be on the outside knocking, trying to get in, okay? Now it's kind of funny with GarageBand, iTunes, and all kinds of other things. Anybody can play in the entertainment business. Can you get traction? That's an interesting question. I will recommend another book, which is more difficult to read, but even more satisfying. That is Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, where he says in any endeavor, it takes 10,000 hours of practice to get great. And his point was the Beatles did in excess of 1,000 gigs before you knew them as the Beatles. Most acts today don't do 1,000 gigs in their career. And I know I've talked about this book before, but it really is something that has stuck with me. And the book's already 2 years old. I went to see Paul McCartney at Amoeba Records, and he put down a heckler better than anybody I've ever seen because he has that much experience. Anyway, you have to have that kind of dedication and that much experience to be good enough to play. Okay. Most people do not have that. Most people are really not that good, but they want to be successful. If you read this Jerry Weintraub book, you will see what it takes to be successful. I don't know how music business savvy you are. In the music business right now, there's this guy, Irving Azoff, the most powerful guy in the music business, is the CEO of Live Nation, which is both Live Nation and Ticketmaster and Frontline. They manage in excess of 100 acts. And love them or hate them, you probably, A, don't know them. And this is one of the points of the Weintraub book. They don't have time for you. Not because they don't like you. It's that they're playing on such a high level. And Weintraub makes another important point, that at that level, everything cross-pollinates. You become successful enough, all of a sudden the people in politics want to know you, the people in TV want to know you, and you may feel left out, but these people fight to get there. But the real point is these business people have a very specific personality, okay? Jerry Weintraub is working for MCA. Lou Wasserman, who was considered to be the most powerful gentleman in the entertainment business prior to him losing control of Universal and ultimately dying, and he left MCA. It's like leaving the Beatles, or we go to the Stones. Mick Taylor, phenomenal guitarist, left the Stones. Neither have been as good since. And you're sitting there and going, you left the Stones? Or like the guy who left Metallica, Jason Newsted. Now, in the movie, they say they didn't treat him well. But you know, who's listening to Jason Newsted today? Okay? You're going to leave the most powerful talent agency to do what? And that's what Lou Wasserman asked Jerry. Jerry says, I don't know yet. But Jerry did a number of things. He was a manager, ultimately a concert promoter. But embodied in his story is the identity of these people. These are people who, on some level, are ruthless, but at another level, see the goal and get there. And you read this book and it immediately divides the whole population into two types of people. People like that and people who are not like that. Now, if you're an artist, you need a businessman. You need somebody like Jerry to be involved. And you say, well, you know, I got to tweet myself. I got to, you know, do all my own effort. That is true. But if you become big enough, the Jerry Weintraubs of the world will find you. Or if you call them, they will return your phone call. It's like Jerry becomes so successful promoting Elvis that Frank Sinatra calls him. What do Frank Sinatra and Elvis have in common? As a matter of fact, Jerry delineates the differences. Whereas Elvis can really play anywhere in America. You know, they're both dead at this point, but in their heyday, really Frank Sinatra was in the cities with heavy, you know, Italian populations. Not only Italian, but he had great roots there. Okay. They were both singers, performers. That was about it. But Jerry did such a good job with Elvis that Frank called him out of the blue and said, I want you to meet with me. That's the way the entertainment business works. If you're knocking on the door of these famous people, these powerful people, they're not going to let you in because they don't have enough time to let you in. And they only have time to work with the best, most successful people. You may hate that. The only thing I can tell you is you got to be that good so these people ultimately will call you. Now, Jerry, if you listen to him, he established a company called Concerts West, which made concert promotion national. And as a result, costs went down and both the promoter himself and the act, Elvis, Sinatra, a million other people could make more money. Okay. The local people hated that. The people who were just in their own were dealing with the same thing or the aftermath right now. The independent promoters hate Live Nation, but maybe the independent promotion in a region, maybe that's a paradigm. This time has passed. That's a whole nother podcast. But you have to address these questions at this level. Jerry made these breakthroughs. If you read this book, it will tell you so much of how the music business and the movie business ultimately work. One of the great things he talks is Robert Altman, who's also not with us anymore, although Jerry is with us. He says, I want you to produce a movie. You'll be a great movie producer. What, of course, Robert Altman does not say is everyone's already rejected this movie. Jerry says yes because he believes in Altman's talent. That's the most important thing. People have to believe you're great. And unlike a lot of meddlers, Jerry makes a point is, I don't tell the talent what to do. Not whatsoever. My goal is to take care of business and make it easy for them to do what they do, which is the antithesis of so much in the music business and the movie business right now. You're going to see these movies, you go, they got like 2,000 writers and the movie is crappy. Where the movies you love, like Nashville, which is the movie I'm referring to that Altman directed and Jerry ultimately produced, his very first movie, it's a vision of one guy. And that's Jerry's point. I'm making it great for the artist. And he talks how he built John Denver. And it's pretty amazing because there was that moment when John Denver was everywhere. John Denver had specials. John Denver was with the Muppets. He explains how he built it. And he does tell a lot of great stories. I mean, he tells the story wanting to be in business in Chicago promoting concerts. And ultimately, he has to go through Mayor Daley and the mafia to have a meeting with this guy. And the guy keeps him waiting for 4 hours. And then when he finally gets into this guy's office, the guy doesn't even look up from his desk. And Jerry insults him. He says, I'm not happy. I'm not happy. You can't. You maybe wait for 4 hours and you can't even be nice to me? People recognize the truth. I can tell you so many stories. Everybody's such a kiss-ass in this world. And ironically, the people at the top a lot of times love to get the truth because they don't get the truth from anybody. We see this on the same thing. We were just talking earlier. Kid Rock's got a new album out, and he's got some hype in Entertainment Weekly. You know what the hype is. My album is fantastic, the best ever. I love everybody. Make me successful. We're all in this together. I'm just a humble guy. No, he came across as a real guy. They asked him about Steven Tyler doing American Idol. He says, that guy should forfeit his rock credentials. How could he do that? I've lost faith in the guy. That's how we feel. And someone else is saying this. And Jerry, time and again, will say the unsayable, and it works to his benefit. Anyway, he goes into business with this guy in Chicago, and he makes a lot of money, and everybody's happy. But then he starts sending his number two to Chicago to deal with this guy, Wirtz. And the number two comes back after a couple of years and goes, I think we're getting shorted. And you have to realize this is, a couple of decades ago, so money... the numbers I'm going to give you are not going to be stratospheric, but they meant a lot in those days. So Jerry goes there and he says, I'm going to go to Chicago myself. And he sits down with Wirtz. He says, I think you're shorting me. And Ward says, well, how much do you think you're short? And I'm shorting you. Because I think you're shorting me $1.5 million. And Ward says, that's completely wrong. I'm shorting you $2 million. You got to mind your money, Jerry. It's like anything else. It's like, you know, these people get so busy doing anything but their real job. And then all of a sudden, you know, the acts leave them or all kinds of things happen. So ultimately, Jerry continued to go to Chicago to get the money. And I could tell you 20 other stories, but all I want to do is I want to convey with my enthusiasm that if you are a student of the entertainment business, this is a great read. This is a fun read, but this is a read that I've never seen in any other book. It tells what it takes to be successful, not so much in lessons, though there's occasional lessons. Like one of the lessons is, you know, don't sell your company because then you're going to answer to people. Or, you know, Jerry's sick of taking phone calls. Says, I don't want clients anymore. I want businesses, you know, where I don't want people waking me in the middle of the night. There's all these little life lessons, but more, it's leading by example. That this is the personality it takes to be successful in this business, if you're a business person. And if you are a talent, you want to be involved with somebody like Jerry Weintraub. Until next time, it's Bob Lefset for the RhinoCast.
You've just listened to a Rhino.com podcast. Visit Rhino.com for music, movies, and all kinds of crazy shit.